All right, it's 9:30, so anyway, try to be on schedule. Let me go ahead and start. Forget the elephant right now. I'll explain that in a second. I thought I'd give you a little bit of background about myself. I was raised in a Catholic home. In high school, I wanted to know what the truth was, like probably, hopefully, a lot of you. And when I was in the service, a four-square minister led me to the Lord. When I was over in Guam, I came back. Didn't know anybody like this chaplain, and I was only there for a short time. And so when I came back, I was kind of didn't know where to go to. I didn't want to go in the Catholic Church. And so anyway, I kind of went back to my old ways. Well, anyway, things began to stir, and ended up being in the VA hospital for about 9 weeks. They call it acute episode. While I was there, I was praying, and he spoke to me. He says, "I want to come into your heart," and he gave me a promise. I think this fall will be 40 years, which is kind of interesting and might have some significance. I'll find out because I haven't seen quite the promise completely filled out. For 40 years, I've really felt like I've been in the wilderness. But I can look back and I see the Lord beginning to direct my path. I got in this judging back in the 80s. I was going to a church up in Kansas City, and some of the verses that hit me was, "Judge not, lest you be judged. For out of the heart the mouth speaks, and by your words you justify yourself, and by your words you condemn yourself." So I started listening to people, the words started hitting me. And like I was laid off from the railroad, and I was working for a boss up in Kansas City, and he would lie all the time. And I said something to him in a nice way, and he said, "Well, everybody lies, and like in business." So that was his justification. Well, 6 months later went by, and he happened to go talk to a Christian builder. And he comes back and he says, "That Chuck's no Christian. He lied to my face." And he says, "That's one thing I can't stand, is somebody lying to my face." And those verses began to hit. By your words you justify yourself, by your words you condemn yourself. So his standard was, I can't stand somebody lying to my face. Well, then if you're before the judge, the judge is going to play back what you said, and so how do you justify all your lies? So those began to start clicking into me, and I was going to church at the time, and he says, from the pulpit, "If you love me, you won't criticize me. If you love the church, you won't criticize the church." I started going through a series of events. I was kind of backslidden, so I really felt like I needed to be ministered to. But I started going through these events, and after about 14 months, I was in the office with the main pastor and the assistant pastor. I felt there was something wrong from the top down, but it was just an abstract, there was no concrete evidence. I listened to him, and they said something, and I asked a question, and he kind of came loose, and he says, "Who do you think you are, the Pope? You're arrogant, you're full of pride, you have a spirit of witchcraft." The verse hit me is, "A gentle answer turns away wrath." And so things kind of calmed down a little bit, but towards the end, I brought up the question about his statement one time about, "If you love me, you won't criticize me. If you love the church, you won't criticize the church." I questioned him. I said, "I don't see any scriptural basis to that." And I brought up the seven churches in Revelation where the good and the bad was brought out, both individuals and groups. And he says, "When you become Jesus Christ, you can come and talk to me." And so all of a sudden, that was the concrete of that feeling that I was having. There was something wrong from the top down. So anyway, there were, during that kind of period of time, you know, the church says you're not supposed to judge, and I'm picking up all these verses of in the New Testament. John the Baptist before the John the Baptist with the Pharisees, he says, "You brood of vipers." Stephen before the Sanhedrin, he says, "You're like your fathers, the devil that, or the father, you're like your fathers that killed the prophets. You killed Messiah." Revelations with the seven churches, and so those verses kind of hit me. The one that finally hit me, and I'll show it again, is Isaiah 5:20. He says, "You call good evil and evil good." So see, I'm sitting up and I'm thinking, when a preacher goes along and they say, "Well, hey, here's brother so and so, and he's a good brother, and here's a good ministry, and all this other stuff," he's making a judgment. If I call you good, I've just made a judgment. And so that was kind of the nail that kind of drove home that we judge. So, like many of us are probably or will go through a little bit, is I kind of pray to the Lord, and I said, "Okay, I see that we're supposed to judge, but I said, I see my faults. How can I judge somebody else and be fair with them? Because I know that standard is going to be applied back to me." And I kind of see a teacher a little bit, is a teacher will correct the student, but it's not a condemning issue. You're trying to make that student better. And so, and there's, a child grows, so you got to be patient with people, see where they're from. There is issues mentioned in the New Testament that somebody that's in leadership, that put themselves in leadership, are held at a higher accountability. So I kind of take that in consideration too. So anyway, as I moved along, I was trying to point out these scriptures to people and was, you know, not received. And then when I got in the Hebraic roots in 06, from after coming back from Israel, there was a Sukkot up in Iowa, and there were some speakers that you guys would know, they've been here, were there too. And so one of them would say, I'm sick and tired of the, all the problems in the Messianic movement. And I said, I thought about it, and sometimes you go real hesitant, and I said, I think I know what the problem is, and it's dealing with judgment. So anyway, the Lord progresses you, and so I didn't know the Hebrew, the Torah aspect of judging and judgments, and so the Lord began to, I believe, teach me more in depth about that. I'm still in that process of learning other things, and also how to judge properly. I have my faults too, and towards am I being fair with somebody that like I would like to be treated fairly with you. So anyway, from there, I got this picture of the elephant. I had a general foreman that, really didn't care for too much, but he'd say, "How do you eat an elephant? It's one bite at a time." So anyway, where do you start? So I'm going to be dancing around that elephant a little bit. One place might be a little choicer than the other, and I'm not going to devour that thing in 2 hours. So, hopefully this will bring some curiosity with you, and when you read scripture and you see where judgment is used, you'll pay a little bit more attention to the verse and see how it's applied. Also, real quick, I started collecting verses. I got about 15 pages that I can email you. What I've done is put down the Hebrew word and Strong's definition, and so as the verses go along, where it mentions judgment or something, I put the Hebrew number next to it, and that's with both the New and the Old Testament, because you got crano, anacrano, and diacrano, and other verses in the New Testament that are translated as judging or judgment in various forms. So anyway, I'm not a good speaker. I feel pretty good right now. Sometimes I kind of get in a groove and I can, when are you going to shut him up? But then other times, you know, I feel like you're crawling a hole. But anyway, we'll see how it goes here. I got four questions. Have you ever heard of someone say or have ever said or comment regarding your children for having good judgment? Would you like to say that about your children, that your children has or have good judgment? And what benefits would it be for them to have good judgment? The benefits would be like if you're sending your kids off to college and mom and dad aren't around, you would hope that they would have good judgment when they're tempted by people to, let's go out and party, let's go out and drink, do drugs, sex, everything else, or whatever. So you would hope that they would have good judgment. Fourth question, do you think God would like to say that regarding His children, that they also have good judgment? Well, I was in my prayer closet, and while I was taking my shower, everybody use a shower for your prayer closet? Yeah. No warm water coming down and stuff, and the verse hit me. I think God did say that about his kids. I'm going to repeat the verses because this is being recorded, so nobody, the people that have the CD will not see the verses on the screen, so I'm going to mention that. So I'm going to read between Deuteronomy 4, 5 through 9. It says, "Behold, I have taught you statutes and judgments," the word is mishpat, "that will bring up, even as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should do so in the land where you go to possess it. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations, which shall hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what nation is there so great, who has a God so near to them as the Lord our God is in all things that we call on Him for? And what nation is there so great that has statutes and judgments, mishpat, so righteous is all this law which I set before you this day? Only take heed to yourself and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things which your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. But teach them your sons and your sons' sons." So here I see that God would want the nations to observe his children for having statutes and judgments that are so righteous. In the Amidah, known as a standing prayer, under the section for the righteous reign of God, is it says, "Restore our judges as in the former times, and our counselors as at the beginning, and remove from us sorrow and sighing." Like I said, this has been a progression. So I went to a congregation and where they were saying the Amidah, and I see this, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm in this judging issue, and I'm saying, well, all of a sudden they're praying for the God to restore our judges. Anybody know where that verse comes or that comes from? Isaiah 1:26. And this is different because if you look, they're going to leave out portions of this verse. It says, "I will restore the judges as at first and the counselors at the beginning. Afterwards there shall be called the city of righteousness, the faithful city." So what I see out of this is God will restore the judges as at first in the beginning, and the counselors at the beginning. And because of their influence and stuff, it will make the city righteous and faithful. And here's another verse that I think is prophetic. Psalms 94:15, "But judgment shall return unto righteousness." It's mishpat, it's judgment, "unto righteousness, and all the upright in heart will follow it." I think I mentioned Psalms 94:15 for the taping. What I see out of this is right now God's people have lack an understanding that we're supposed to judge, and then also how to apply that into righteous judging. And so right now I see that it's not really righteous at this time. And so judgment, when God's people learn that, I think that we're supposed to judge and judge righteously, how to apply it, it will return to unrighteousness. Here's a picture of a court. Anyway, we got the judge, the jury, and the two attorneys. And so what's going to happen here is, of course, you can be judge and jury here in this situation. They present their case, their evidence. So there's a process here. And so the judge will finally make a decision. And so with his decision, the thing is now, is his decision right or just? And I'm going to, and righteousness and justice are going to, to me mean the same thing. So, and it's interesting, I watch too much TV, but I've watched some of the court cases. And it's interesting that they'll interview the people involved, or maybe mentioned or ask somebody else in the peanut gallery, what do you think of the judge's decision? So at that time, if you really think about it, they're going to make a judgment regarding what the judge says. They're going to say, well, I don't think he was right about it, or he was just, or that he was unjust or unright about his decision. So the process I want to point out is we're, and I'm going to show in the old, with the judges in the old, in Torah, they were supposed to diligently look into the issues before they make a righteous judgment. So how many people, there's a practice that applies to us. Before we make a judgment, have we diligently looked into the issues before we state our position? And if you listen to Lee Miller yesterday, I think it was yesterday, correct? That somebody asked him about what he thought about something, and he would go along and he says, I haven't really looked into it really. And see, that's fear, is because he hasn't really gathered his facts yet, and he knows it. And he mentioned something about concrete. You know, don't pour the concrete in before you're ready for it. You know, I see how we can do is like, well, I'm not really sure about this, and I'm praying about it, I'm thinking about it, and those situations on certain subjects can take quite a period of time. But anyway, what you're doing is diligently looking, trying to gather facts before you make a decision. Okay, so we're going to see if the Bible teaches us to judge or to judge not. What does the Bible teach? I think I can prove my case with one question. Who judges the judgmental person? Because most of the people that start accusing people of being judgmental are the ones that don't believe in judging, and who are you to judge? But see, if I say that so and so is judgmental, what am I doing? I'm making a judgment that they're judgmental. And also one thing I'm going to throw in is, I was at the rescue mission. I used to go to the rescue mission some years back, and I used to talk about judgment before I knew Torah and stuff. So anyway, this one woman says, "Well, you're not right when I first started," and she says, "Well," and I mentioned Matthew 7:1, and she said, "Well, you're not supposed to judge," and I said, "Just listen to where I'm coming from, and then if you disagree or have any questions, then you know, present it to me." No, you're not supposed to judge. And then she had a little teenage son or with her, and he started chiming in. And I said, okay, Matthew 7, 1 and 2, which I'll bring up, it says, judge not lest ye judge, for in the manner that ye judge, it'll be judged unto you. So I used to say, for the standard that you apply will be applied back to yourself. And so anyway, I said, so let's see if your standard holds water compared to mine. I said, I believe in judging. I do judge. And I said, so let's see if your standard holds water. And I said, what are you doing to me right now? Aren't you telling me I'm wrong? And so anyway, she gets mad and leaves. And so she must have said something to the rescue mission leadership or something. And that was the last time they ever asked me to come back. But as it continued on, she left, and there was people in the staff there. And I said, I want you to judge me. And I said, you're going to judge me. You know, you're going to say I agree with you or disagree with me or somewhere in between. But I said, I could be a false prophet, and I could be leading you down some path you don't want to go. So we all do judge. The finish line, I thought I'd kind of like this. I'm going to not try to keep moving my finish line a little bit, but anyway, I'm going to try to give you my conclusions instead of wandering through with different things. And you say, well, where are you going to, where are you going with this? And so anyway, my conclusions are the Bible teaches that we are to judge, that we are to judge righteously, but we can judge incorrectly and pervert righteousness. Judging and judgment is so misunderstood. Judgment is very important. And I do not want to blame Satan for everything, but Satan has done a good job in hiding this truth from us. Satan would not like to see God's people come to this understanding regarding judgment. And good and righteous judging protects us. So, just like I said, when your kids go to college, you would hope that they would have good judgment. So when people try to lead them in a different direction, that you know that they're looking at Scripture and you know and stuff and seeing what they need to do. Also, it protects us against where Yeshua said, "Beware of false prophets." And teachers, Peter says teachers. So we need that process of judging for protection. See what time. There's a case when I was working, I used to be a union chairman, and I ended up having to go to see a counselor. And I went into it as a joint venture between me and the company because I was union steward, of having somebody to mediate between us to see where the problems are. And so anyway, some things happened, and I signed some papers, and all of a sudden I went to the counselor, and it was always revolving around me. And so the... there was a the counselor that they mostly use was in Kansas City, and he referred me to one in Topeka. The one in Kansas City, I went to the one in Topeka for actually 7 times, but the after the second time, he got a hold of the one in Kansas City and said that I was hard to get along with, always finding fault, I'm belligerent, opinionated. Finding fault, what did I say? There are 6 of them, but I can remember 5. So I'm a little slow. I'm not the brightest light bulb in the room. And so anyway, I got on the bit of being opinionated. I said, I have an opinion, so does everybody else. I said, what you need to do is go back and through Chuck and the company and find out examples of where you think my opinion's incorrect. And which he never did. And so we kept going over this all the time. On the 6th session, we were on the phone, and we were going over this opinionated stuff, and I said, why can everybody have an opinion except for me? I said, when I voice my opinion, I'm condemned for having an opinion. I said, but you wrote a letter about me. Chuck's made his comments, and the company's got their opinions about me. But anyway, he says, well, you think you need to change? And I said, you haven't convinced me anything. He says, well, I think you've got a problem. I said, see right there, you voiced your opinion and made a judgment. He says, well, I shouldn't have said it like that. I said, no, you're going to have judgments and opinions. I said, now you got to justify it, which he never did. Never explain why, what problem I had or anything like that. A week later, I'm walking in his office, and he's right behind me. He says, I don't understand you. I don't know what makes you tick. Well, my mind goes back a week later. He's telling me I got a problem. Now, how can you tell somebody you got a problem when you don't understand them? And they said I'm hard to get or finding fault. Well, they're finding fault with me. See, I'm being condemned for finding fault, but they're finding fault with me. Well, see, what goes around comes around. So it's like you're fitting in the same category. Let me see, finding fault. I have a cause. Well, they got causes, but they're not giving me an example of why you think my cause is wrong. So if I listen to them, I mean, like even in Yeshua, we all look at him as perfect. You know, I believe he was perfect, sinless and stuff. But yet he was accused by the Pharisees and said, you're doing the works of the devil. You're the devil and everything else. So is he being falsely accused? And if he would have listened to him, he said, man, I really got a problem. You know, and so that's where the protection kind of comes into play. When someone or the Bible mentions judgment, what do we think of and what comes to mind? Is it doom and gloom? And I should have meant condemning. A lot of times when we mention judgment, we think a condemning issue. And I'll show you a situation where I don't believe that's the case. When you hear the words judgment, judging judgments, etc., what verses or verse comes to mind? Well, one of the biggest one is judge not, lest you be judged. And I can think of, to be on the case of not judging, I think Paul said something about, and I should brushed up on it, about, you know, don't judge right now, but wait until later, basically when we get all the facts during the judgment issue. But the thing is, I don't see anybody mentioning, for with what judgment you judge, you shall be judged, and with the measure you meet, it shall be measured to you. What I see here, and I'll try to bring it out, have you ever said something really far out or, you know, kind of stupid to try to make a point? I'm throwing it out a little bit. So do you think Yeshua might be saying the same thing as something real stupid? If I knew Torah and you had the judges and you're supposed to judge your neighbor righteously and everything else, and he says not to judge, I'm thinking, where are you coming from? But is he making the point in verse 2? For with what judgment you will judge shall be judged to you, and the measure you meet, it shall be measured to you. So anyway, the first part I'm going to bring out a little bit. What I see is in that maybe possibly is false witnessing. Because if I'm a false witness, then the punishment that I'm desiring upon somebody else is going to be applied to me. But if I'm going to be a false witness to somebody else, I'm going to judge that person as unworthy to be able to tell him to be truthful about him. I'm going to look at him as worthless and whatever. But if I look at that somebody as valuable and a creation of God or something, I'm not going to be a false witness towards him. But anyway, measures. Like I told you about my boss who would lie, and then he says, I can't stand somebody lying in my face. Where's measures used? It's unfair weights and measures in the in Torah. And so if I'm going to deal with weights and measures and I'm trying to buy or sell something between you and I, what am I going to do? If I'm using unfair weights and measures, I'm lying and being deceptive to you. And so my boss, I could see, when I got into the Torah, I could see that's what my boss is doing. He was lying and being deceptive to the other person. So it's unfair weights and measures. I'm going to bring up the aspect, I can't remember, it's the next slide, Matthew 7, going up through 15 of other things Yeshua said. Do you ever consider or quote some of the other 747 verses where judgment, etc., words are used, or other verses where we see judgment being applied? And I'll explain the 747. So let's begin looking at the Hebrew, Greek, in English words and some scripture verses. In the Old Testament, I want to focus in, and I, like I said, I got to mention it for the CD, is in the Old Testament, these are the Strong's Concordance numbers and words, Mishpat. It'll all start with H, it'll be 4941. It's used 421 times. Shaphat, 8199, used 203 times. Din or Dune, used 1777, used 24 times. Now, Sadak, Sadaka, and I'm not good on English nor Hebrew, but anyway, there's Sadaka and Sadak, and anyway, 66 is used 157 times, 6664 is used 118 times, and 6663 is used 14 times. The last three, Sadak and stuff, deal with or going to be translated as righteousness and justice, and really don't have anything to do with particularly judgment as the first three. In the New Testament, as krinos used is G 29:19, used 114, anacrino 350, 16 times, diacrino 12:52 is 19 times, and some other verses or other words. How are these Hebrew words translated in the English scripture? Bishvah can be translated as judge, judgment, judgments, justice, ordinance, and ordinances. I went through the 421 times, and I took a list on how they were translated, and I got about probably 50 different translations of Mishpat. Some of them are used once. Custom is used once, or cause once. Justly was used once. Justice is used once, which I'll bring up. Judgment was used 187 times, and judgments are 107 times. So that's usually most of the time it's translated as judgment or judgments. Then you have Shaphat. How many times does the King James Bible mention judgment and related words? And that's where you get I get the 747 times. So if we looked at all these situations to see how they're applied, judgment is mentioned 285, judgments 125, judge 191, judge 63, judges 53, judgest 8, judgeth 17, and judging 6. Mishpat is H 49:41. And it comes from 8199, and it's properly a verdict, favorable or unfavorable, pronounced judicially, especially a sentence or formal decree, human or particularly divine law, individual or collectively, including the act. So one thing I want to point out is the aspect of the favorable or unfavorable. When we go before the judge, the judge is going to listen to the case, the evidence. He might find somebody a false witness and find that the person that's being accused is not guilty, and the judge decision is that he's a He's an honest person. He didn't do it. But he could listen to the evidence and determine that the guy's guilty and declare a punishment. He could also, the judge can also go along, and the person can be guilty, but says, "I did it, and I'm sorry." And as in scriptures, that I'm willing to restore the damage I did. And so at that time, I see the judge being merciful at that time, even though the person has done the act. Brown's driver Briggs defines in right here the act of deciding a case is mishpat. Shafat, a primitive root to judge, that is, pronounce sentence for or against. See, there's that for and against. Favorable or unfavorable. Din is a primitive word to rule by implication, to judge as empire, also to strive on and on. Now here's Sadaka, where I'm going to bring out righteousness. It comes from 66:63. So this Sadaka is 66:67. It's rightness. Doesn't say anything about judgment or judging or anything else in that. We need to be careful about just reading the English translations. For example, justice and righteousness. Justice is mentioned 28 times and used only in the Old Testament. The Hebrew words are, and I'm showing that is, Sadaka is 66:66, 66:64, 66:63. Only once out of the 28 times mishpat is translated as justice is 49:41. But I've noticed the other translations, even the Jewish Study Bible, but this is, I have eSword, so I kind of grew up on New American Standard, but that's not in there. But this is American Standard Version, where justice is mentioned 116 times in comparison to the King James's 28. The English Standard Version mentions justice as 135 times. So anyway, I'm going to try to show you how that applies. So all of a sudden, I stumbled into looking up righteousness. And I'm seeing the same Hebrew words as Sadak, Sadaka, is 66:64 is mentioned 124 times, 66:64 is 78 times, 66:65 is one, and 66:63 is one time. So in comparison, in the King James, this is the how many times those Hebrew words are used and they're translated as just or righteousness, and you can see the comparison there. Okay, so I'm going to start bringing up some verses and see and showing how these words are translated. For I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, that they shall keep the way of the Lord and do justice, which is Sadak or whatever, and judgment, Mishpat 49:41, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. In the American Standard Version, it's using righteousness and justice. And like I said, the King James are putting these two words, righteousness and justice, or translated from the Hebrew word, but we got mishpat up here, which is normally translated as judgment. So we're losing the meaning. And in the English Standard Version also uses justice. Now I'm going to show you how they'll use this in both of these American Standard and English Standard. One minute they're going to mention as justice, but then they're going to also translate it as judgment later in some verses. Psalms 33:5, God loveth righteousness and judgment, mishpat, and the earth is full of the goodness of the Lord. And the American Standard Version uses justice. Psalms 97:2, the clouds of darkness are around about him. Righteousness and judgment, mishpat, are the inhabitants of his throne. But in the American Standard Version, it's using justice. So again, are we losing some meaning behind it? The Lord, Psalms 103:6, the Lord executes righteousness and judgment, mishpat, for all that are oppressed. The Lord works righteousness and justice for all who are oppressed. So it's they're translated mishpat as justice, the English Standard. Isaiah 32:1, behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and the prince shall rule in judgment, mishpat. But the English Standard Version translated as justice. Ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, mishpat. Thou shalt not respect the persons of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. But in righteousness thou shalt judge, shafat, thy neighbor. Let me see. The American Standard Version does this, I don't want to say correct, but see, all of a sudden now they're translated not justice, but they did translate it like the King James as judgment. But the English Standard Version translated as injustice. Judges and officers, Deuteronomy 16:18, judges and officers shalt thou make thee in all thy gates which the Lord thy God giveth thee throughout the tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. So the American Standard Version now is translating mishpat, not as justice, but as the King James, as judgment. And also the English Standard Version is translating as judgment. So why are they doing that? I mean, particularly, is why don't you just stick to the same word all the time instead of switching it up from justice to judgment? Deuteronomy 1:17, ye shall not respect the persons of in judgment, mishpat, but ye shall hear the small as well as the great, and ye shall not be afraid of the face of man, for the judgment, mishpat, is God's, and the cause that is too hard for you, you bring it unto me, and I will hear it. Again, in those, they're using judgment, if I remember correctly. Yeah, well, for judgment, which should go up in here. So they're translating it as judgment. One thing I want to point out here is interesting, is where Moses sets up the judges, he says, when you have a too hard a case, bring it to me. And so also with when I showed the jury room, is there's different levels of courts. You got a traffic court. You got, you know, because there, to me, there's different levels of situations. You got a traffic court. You got a civil, criminal. You can go up to the Supreme Court. And so, what I like about this is sometimes we might not be able to handle, because of our walk in the Lord and knowledge and stuff, we might not be able to handle some of the deeper issues about things, but we can handle the small until we continue to grow in the Lord and be able to, you know, learn more and handle some of the deeper cases. He has showed thee, O man, what is good, and what doth the Lord require thee, but to do justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God. Well, now here the King James now is all of a sudden usually used judgments. Now this is the one time they translated as justly. So if you put judgment in there, you know, it might, you know, what does it say? Let's look at some of the verses Yeshua mentioned. Okay, we're going to go through Matthew 7, which is judge not, but we'll go through 15. Already mentioned judge not, the verse 2, 1 and 2, but also in verse 3 through 5. And why do you look at the splinter that is in thy brother's eye, but do not consider the beam that is in your own eye? And how would you say to your brother, let me pull the splinter out of your eye, and behold, the beam is in your own eye? Hypocrite, first cast the beam out of your own eye, and then you shall see clearly to cast the splinter out of your brother's eye. So he's saying don't take the splinter out of your brother's eye, but make sure the beam's out of yours. This goes along with, I think, a verse in Galatians 6:1. It says, brother, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. See, here's a judgment issue. If you're spiritual, what about seeing it says if you see a brother in a fault, you are spiritual, correct such a one, restore him. Well, don't I have to make a judgment towards somebody if I think there's a fault in them? But this verse kind of spoke to me when Baker and Swaggart were going through their fiasco back in the 80s. And Jimmy Baker had his affair, and Swaggart, I can remember on TV walking up and down the stage saying, talking about Baker and, I can't remember his exact words, but like, I wouldn't do that and all this other stuff. And then shortly later, he was caught with a prostitute in, I think it was New Orleans. And so the thing is, did he consider thyself, lest thou be tempted, in the spirit of meekness? And so the thing is, if we are a spiritual and we're going to restore somebody, if we stand, it's because of the grace of the Lord and not because of our own strength. And if we're going in with our own strength, we're going to soon be tempted. So if I'm going to try to correct somebody, or if I feel like that's what the Lord's wanting me to do, I need to realize that it's I can be in His situation in a flash if I'm not relying upon the Lord in His grace. And not looking down particularly at that person, in a real negative way. Matthew 7:6, give not that which is holy to dogs, neither cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and render you. So, again, here's a judging issue. What are your pearls, and who's the swine and the dogs? So we need to know, what criteria makes a pearl between something that's precious and something that's not, and whose swines are dogs? And this is all in this is Matthew 6, and we just passed we're right next to Matthew 1. It says Matthew 15 and 16, chapter 7, beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravaging wolves. You shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes and thorns and figs and thistles? Yeshua also said Matthew 24:24, for there shall rise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, so that if it were possible, ye shall deceive the very elect. Chapter 2 and verse 1, but there are false prophets among you, even as there shall be false teachers. So anyway, who privately bring heresies. So again, they're warning us, and we have to make a judgment on how do we determine who's a good teacher, a righteous teacher, righteous prophet, versus an unrighteous or false prophet and teacher. What criteria do we use to do that?
Whatever their first side does not come to pass,
Well, that's one of them too, but it, I think also by what they're saying too, you know, by
if it's according to Scripture.
Right, right, right.
Bless their fruits.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Okay, 23:23, woe to him, scribe, Pharisees, hypocrites, you pay tithe of mint, anise, and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, krisis, Greek word is 29:20, mercy and faith. So anyway, then here's the definition of krisis 29:20. And subjectly or objectly for or against. See, there's that for and against there. And let me see. What? And here's the word judge is Carino. And, John 7:24, judge not according to appearance, but judge righteous judgment. That's what Yeshua said there. And Carino is 29:19, and as you can see, it deals with there's judge and condemn, punishment, all that. It's actually 10:20. One, is there any questions? Actually, it's supposed to be a question and answer, as I can go on a little bit further and try to get through what Jesus said. I got a verse or two on that. Anybody got any questions? Okay, let me go try to catch this. So if judgment is wrong, or Jesus says judgment is wrong, I just thought of this yesterday, like I said, it's a growing deal. If judgment is wrong, is it also a sin? And so, if it's wrong, should I tempt somebody to judge? And so here's a situation with Yeshua. Luke 7:41-44, and there was a certain creditor, so he's talking to this one guy, he's going to ask him a question. There was a certain creditor which had two debtors, one owed 500 pence and the other 50. And when they had nothing to pay, he frankly forgave them both. Tell me, therefore, which of them will love him most? Simon answered and said, I suppose that he to whom he forgave most. And so Yeshua said to him, you have rightly judged. And the word is krino. So, when we think of judgment at times, I look at this, is that a condemning issue? It's not really a condemning issue. Yeshua just asked him a question: who would love him most? And it was the one that gave, you know, where the Lord forgave the most debt. And so there's no condemning issue in that. But the Lord said, "You've rightly judged." So if judging is wrong, then the Lord kind of prompted this guy to make a judgment.
I think you hit it on the nail on the head there. It's the difference between condemnation, thou shalt not condemn, lest ye be condemned, is a better translation.
Well, that's right. That's a
to judge is to say apple tree, pear tree. Mm-hmm. It's to assess. It's
right.
To say which is which.
Right.
It's not to condemn.
Well, that's not always the case either. Condemning can be a situation case, and you can think of Ananias and Sapphira.
They condemned themselves.
Well, yes, but Peter said,
"Through the ruach, he judged them."
Correct.
It wasn't a condemnation; they did it to themselves.
Well, I agree with you, right? But Peter also prophesied Sapphira's death. He says, men that carried you and Stephen before the Sanhedrin and John the Baptist and the seven churches in Revelation, because John's writing the bad and the good and talks about you tested the false prophets and stuff like that. So anyway, all right, I'll let you, that's about 25 after, I'll do this for the second portion of the part two. Kind of hold it off from there. Yes?
Well, one of the things that I think is needs to be thought about as far as what we often get in disagreements about things because of misunderstandings of terminology.
Right.
And I hear you talking about judgment versus condemning. Well, one of the choices that you have in on number G29 19, one of the choices of definition for the word far gone down below judgment was condemned.
Right.
So I think the reason we have a problem with condemning is that from a secular, non-Torah perspective, people say, what right do you have to declare right and wrong? And we have lived in so many years of lawlessness that's really the heart of this issue is that people say, well, you're trying to make a law, and I don't want to be under a law.
But
and so an example they have is they talk about people who discern counterfeit money.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at counterfeit money and you compare it to the real thing and you make an assessment, a judgment, this is counterfeit. Therefore, the person having it is condemned with having counterfeit money. Did I condemn them with having counterfeit money? No, it's the law.
And that's kind of what you're saying too, in a way. Yeah.
This is not right stuff.
Yeah.
So when we make an assessment that shows somebody is guilty, it is not us that condemns us, because the guilt issue is an issue of what is right and wrong according to a higher authority.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what is the problem, is that often you're in a situation with people, they think you're trying to bear your weight down on them, and you are condemning them with your authority, and they don't like coming under your authority. But the reality is they've not examined their own heart to realize that they're rebelling against the authority that does condemn.
Mm-hmm. But see, also, they, if you think of it, like I said, they're using their authority to tell you you're wrong.
Well, I have.
You see what I'm saying? Because
yeah,
that side is going to establish laws about. I'm thinking of the homosexuality issue. Is like, well, you're bullying, but see, they're making laws that are saying that we can't do something, and eventually they could. Well, they could take us for court for bullying and hate crimes and all that other stuff.
One of the best teachings I heard on this, she brought up a simple thing, and ever since she said that, it's just like, duh, the light bulb came on. When Yeshua said, judge not lest you be judged, for in there, through information you judge, you shall be judged, he was speaking to people who did not want to be judged. Those who have come under submission to Torah, who want to live righteously, welcome judgment, mm-hmm. because they want discernment in their life. They want them to be the person to whom he was speaking was those who did not want to be judged. So when people say, well, the Bible says you're not supposed to judge, yes, it says you're not supposed to judge to those who don't want to be judged themselves. It never says that those who are willing to be judged themselves shouldn't be judging others.
We can judge. I look at the aspect of judging outsiders. You know, it talks about, you know, not judging the outsiders, but how? So is a false prophet an outsider? But you were making a judgment determining that he's a false prophet.
Yeah.
And so if I happen to be able to minister to him, I need to kind of understand, like a teacher. A teacher has to evaluate judge where the student's at.
Well,
and it's not a condemning issue, but I need to evaluate where that person's at, and I'm not going to talk to him about spiritual gifts or some other thing to a false prophet right away, you know. But I'm going to maybe hit on some other aspects of you know, toward, you know, the scriptures.
Well, when Yeshua brings it back to judgment, the kind of judgment you want to be judged with, I think, how do we want to be judged? Do we want people to make the issue clear to us? Do we want people to be merciful to us?
Right.
You know, how would we like to be treated? That's the way we go about approaching somebody else. Approach them with mercy. Approach them with clarity.
Right. Yeah. Well, and see, that's one of the things with when I realize that there is judging, that we're supposed to judge, is, you know, how do I, because would I dish out what I want dish back to me? And a lot of people are dishing out stuff that they wouldn't want back to themselves. And so, but see, I would want my brothers to watch my back. Because if I'm in a fault, you know, basically you're helping me. You're making me a better person, but you got to find my, I mean, if I have a fault and you're presenting that to me, and you know, actually you're really, you're making, trying to help me be a better person. Yeah.